What's up, everyone? This is Joe, SML Podcast, episode 127. This is going to be another interview spectacular, where today we'll be talking with Rick Van Ginkle of Self-Made Miracle to discuss their new title, Panarium, that just came out. And after that, we will be talking with Benjamin Klaise from Crazy Monkey Studios, based out of Belgium, and their brand new title, Guns Gorn Cannoli. Of course, we have two other episodes out this week, so be sure to check those out for more interviews, more stupidity, and more giveaways. So, like, just email us, thesmlpodcast@gmail.com. You could get free things, like free. Like, we have codes that we give you for free, but until then...
This is the SML Podcast.
What's up, everyone? This is Joe. My guest at this time is calling all the way from the Netherlands. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Rick Van Ginkle. I am the game designer and producer for Panarium, also co-founder of Self-Made Miracle, the studio who made the game.
All right. First off, I want to appreciate your accent. You don't have much of an accent. I have a friend who lives in Holland, and he has a very, very, very thick accent, and it's hard to understand him at times, but...
I can put the accent on, though. I know the accent you're talking about, so if you prefer, I can...
and the funny thing with him is he actually learned English through the internet, so right. For him, when he can't think of the proper word, instead of going, or, he just throws random profanity in there. So it's fantastic with him. You'll be talking to him. He's like, dude, I was fucking at fucking Wendy's and it was amazing. Baconator, man. Yeah. He's visited me a few times. He's one of my favorite people in the world. Diggy Diss, if you're listening, we love you. We miss you. But this isn't about you, Frankie. So this is about Panarium.
Yes.
What systems is this available on?
It's coming out on Steam, so that's PC, Mac, Linux, PS4, and Xbox One.
Nice. I have been playing it on the Xbox One.
All right.
I must say that it is A, fantastic, and B, frustrating as hell.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to guess that was your intention.
Yeah.
For the people who don't know what the game is, who've never heard at it, yeah. Give us the sales pitch. Tell us what it is, why we should get it and play it and enjoy it and curse at it.
Sure. Panarium is a 2D platformer in a single screen, somewhat in the style of the original Super Mario Brothers on the arcade machines, and which later on returned in Super Mario 3. It's a game about a little boy called Willy. He works the land on his father's farm and suddenly gets trapped into this sadistic circus show, and where all he can do is run and jump for his life and try to survive as long as possible to ultimately make it out of the sort of gladiator-styled circus show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Before I get into any questions of my own, I do have an email from one of our co-hosts who couldn't be here.
Right.
He asks... So your trailer encourages/tells me to die a lot. That's kind of my play style. Is there a benefit to that, or are you just having fun?
No, there's no real benefit to that. It is also sort of a warning in a way to people that it is okay to die a lot. If you die a lot in this game, don't feel bad about it. Everybody dies a lot. It's what happens.
Plus you'll earn achievements.
And you'll earn achievements. Yeah, that's the only benefit actually is the achievements, yeah.
It's like some Dark Souls stuff when the first time you die, it's like, yeah, get used to it.
Yeah.
He also asks, why does your protagonist look like a clean-shaven Joe Cam, which is me?
We did a lot of iterations on Willy. We sort of came up with the concept of him being this sort of simple farmer boy. But the first few concepts we did, he looked more like... like a sort of a retarded farmer boy, which was not really what we wanted to do. We just wanted people to Yeah, he had like weird eyes and weird teeth and stuff like that. But we pulled out of that because we want people to still sort of identify with the boy and just feel sorry for him. So that's the whole point, is about him being a very humble boy, ending up in this extravaganza and how he sort of deals with that.
Yeah, I know when I first emailed you guys about the game, I think I even mentioned that I can relate with Willy because of the pot belly hanging out, although I don't have a scar on my stomach.
All right. Well, maybe you'll get that someday in the future. You never know.
Maybe. Who knows? That might be my future right there. So tell us about this circus that he gets himself caught up in.
Yeah. The circus is called Panarium, hence the name of the game. And it's essentially sort of a circus that has been existing for ages. And I don't want to spoil the sort of small story we have going on through the campaign mode, so I can't say too much about it. But it sort of revolves around the circus director looking for contestants. And back in the old days, like pre-game stuff, there were a lot of contestants that were like taking pride in going there and doing their jobs. But nowadays, it's sort of fallen out of tone a little bit with the general audience, and they're not really, you know, they don't really want to compete there anymore because it's risky and dangerous. So instead, he just sets out on this quest to capture innocent children and have them perform rather than professionally trained gladiators. So that's how Willy gets into the circus.
Nice. Does the circus face any kind of like fines because of a hazardous workplace environment?
No, in the imaginary world where Panarium takes place, that's all fine. People don't care. It's all about amusement and entertainment. It doesn't matter how bloody it gets.
So murdering children is A-okay in the world of Panarium.
In the world of Panarium, it is. Not in our personal world, as Self-Made Miracle, let me say that.
I was going to say, I think the Netherlands is kind of fucked up.
It's not the Netherlands. The game does not set in. Let that be clear.
So what made you think of a game like this, where the goal is to survive in a demented circus?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a response to a game we did before. This is the first sort of commercial product we created. Before this, we were students, or at least a lot of us were still studying. And we did a game called Paper versus Paper on the iPad, which is a local multiplayer strategy game with one button. That's sort of, people have described it back then. It's been released like 4 years ago or something. People described it as a sort of Dota light. Or something like that. The thing is, it failed horribly in every point. Like, the design wasn't that good. The marketing was horrible. We initially asked $1 for it, and that was even too much for people to pay. So we made it free after a couple of weeks and basically never really looked back on it again. So when we wanted to do a new game, we sort of looked at the things we did before and said to ourselves, okay, what did we do wrong, and how can we improve on that? And one of the things that I, as a game designer, had a lot of trouble with was the spreadsheet balancing in the strategy stuff. Constantly balancing all the different units and their abilities, and not making one overpowered, but also not making it resulting in stalemate matches all the time. And it needed to be some sort of a mathematical correct thing going on there. So actually our programmer said, let's just do an action game. Let's ditch that. I love strategy games myself to play them, but he said, let's do an action game so you can design more based on feeling, like just have a controller in your hand, see what feels good, tweak the variables a little bit and go on rather than doing all of the spreadsheet stuff. So that was the first sort of starting point. And then we thought like, okay, so if we're going to do an action game, it's going to be 2D. Are we going to do side scrolling? And then we thought like, okay, let's not do side scrolling. That's another whole dimension and level design and stuff you have to put in there. Let's just keep this small again so we can focus on the core loop, on the main mechanic, and polish that as much as possible. And from there, we sort of the game sort of grew into Panarium. For a long time, it didn't have any visuals, no setting, no story, nothing whatsoever. It was just a black and white prototype. But after a while, I think I was playing The Cave by Double Fine. And that game has a certain level where it has some sort of a 1800-something circus theme going on. And that's sort of what inspired me. I said, like, this is cool. We were basically going between a factory setting, which was one option, with lots of mechanized stuff, and the circus. And we just thought the circus was way more fun, way more color, way more weirdness, way more option for a storyline as well than to go with sort of a sterilized, wow, that's not the word I want to use at all, anyway, sort of the really cold feeling of a factory setting. But that's why we chose the circus, just because it allowed for more random craziness and fun.
And color, which is a good thing in games these days. Yeah. There's too many games that are just dark and dreary and
just, yeah, I agree.
And it's good to see like balloons and happiness mixed in with all of this murder and chaos.
Yep.
Now for the game, I know one of our co-hosts is a big music guy. You have, obviously, it's a circus game, so you have circus music playing the whole time. Yep. My friend, after watching me play for about 20, 30 minutes or so, I just heard him mutter under his own breath, "Of course there's only one song. It's the circus."
Yeah, there is. I think there is, our audio guy has written, I think, about 4 songs in total. So that's one for the menu and then one for each arena. So as you're playing Arena 1, you hear a track. In Arena 2, you hear a different track. And Arena 3 has another track. But the main theme sort of blends in a little bit into all of those. So it's still sort of a cohesive soundtrack. And it all gets together.
Yeah.
But I think one of the cool things is actually that our music guy also recorded quite a lot of the instruments. So he started off just doing everything on his computer with soft synthesizers and I think one hardware synthesizer as well. And then he basically got a bunch of his friends that play instruments, because he plays in a band too, so he knows a lot of people from that. And he got them together into a recording studio, and he actually recorded, I think, about half of all the instruments or something like that.
Yeah, so when looking through the credits, I saw all the live instruments performed, and it sounds great. But did you do all circus music, hopefully, as a way to drive people insane while playing the game?
I don't know if we're deliberately trying to drive people insane. Maybe a little bit.
It's a good touch. It is a good touch. And the music's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's just some people have like that fear of the circus and fear of clowns. And I think this is perfect for them.
After you've played our game, I think you'll definitely have a fear of the circus. Really.
So explain a bit about the actual gameplay of the game.
Yeah. All right. So gameplay is quite minimalistic in a way that you have a single screen. There's no sprawling levels or anything. You can only run and jump. You do have a double jump, which throws in a bit more variety, and you have the ability to screen wrap. So you go out on the right side and you come in on the left side or vice versa. And this is what we deliberately wanted to keep as simple as possible. So we could derive all variation in gameplay from game objects rather than game controls. So you get used to what you can do with Willy. What you can do with your Willy, you get used to that really quickly. and then basically a new trap comes in, and that sort of forces you to think in a different way. Like, okay, I thought I knew how to dodge the rocket, but now this one is chasing me, so I can use the screen wrap to escape it quickly. Or I thought I could screen wrap, but now this trap comes in that limits this, and oh shit, now I have to think in a whole different direction to get this challenge done. So I really try to derive the variation from the different arena level designs, and but mostly the traps variation that comes in that, and the different combinations in traps from the top row and the bottom row as well.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of traps. I have ones that I don't mind, like that pink goop that gets shot at you. And then there's ones like the machine gun that shoots in 3 directions that I absolutely hate because it always finds a way to kill me. How many different traps are there in the game?
There is 14 different traps, and they can all be combined with each other on the top rail and the bottom rail to create different combinations. So that's a lot of different combinations you can look at. Though not every trap can go with another trap. Like in the challenges, some of the stuff has been set. Like each round, this trap spawns. Some of it is random, but in arcade mode, it's basically all random. And during playtest, we found out that sometimes if you do 2 traps together, it just gets too difficult for anybody to win it. So we sort of excluded certain things from each other, like they can never exist.
Which ones were too hard to...
I'm trying to remember. It's been quite a while since I've been messing around with that. Let me see. I think we had something with the giant laser, the sweeper, we call it, that came up. I think like sweeper and water or something is something we disabled.
Oh, that would be brutal.
Really, programming. God, I can look it up, but it'll take me some time, so it might not be the best thing right now, but I don't know actually anymore. But that's quite a fair amount that we exclude. Also a lot of the same traps, like two Tesla coils or two lightning beams that destroy your platforms. They do spawn sometimes in challenges, because there I sort of have more control over what's going on.
Yeah.
But in arcade mode, they never get together, because they just blow your level to bits in a few seconds, and then you only have a few platforms left to jump on.
Yeah, when I was playing that one and it was shooting the platformer part, my roommate was like, what the hell? It's just like destroying the platform. What the hell are you going to do in like the next round? And then it all came back.
Yeah, they'll come back again. I mean, the sort of main design philosophy behind this game is that we wanted to make a game that is very hard but not unfair.
Yeah.
So it's okay for people to die. It's okay for people to die a lot. It's even okay to get frustrated. But hopefully people, just before the point where they actually rage quit, they progress and they feel like, oh yeah, finally I did it. And they keep on playing. That's sort of thing that we try.
It seems every time I've died in the game, like I'll make a jump and I'll like hit an icicle that's shooting down through the stage. And I'll be like, ah, that's on me. That's not the game being unfair. That's on me because I wasn't paying attention.
That's why we did a lot of playtesting as well to get that right. Because sometimes people think of people who make games like they're some kind of magicians and they just know these kind of things. we absolutely don't.
You mean you're not all wizards?
No, they're not. At least I'm not. I don't know about my colleagues, but I'm not a wizard. Definitely not a wizard. So we tested it out a lot and got feedback from that, and we took it to a lot of shows, and then we were just looking at people over the shoulder, what they were doing, taking notes, and then tweaking stuff around. Sometimes it even felt really weird for me, because I thought, like, you're just a noob. Why are you dying on this? This is not supposed to be hard. I don't think this is hard.
There's no traps in this stage. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, but still, I mean, if people keep on dying and you see that the majority of players thinks it is too hard, then obviously it's too hard, and you just have to adjust to it to make it a better product overall.
I'll admit, I died on the very, very first tutorial level, but it was out of curiosity. I was like, can you go on the floor here? Nope, you die down there.
Yeah, that's something we've seen people do a lot. It's just like, oh, I didn't know if I would die if I jumped down there. But you just try it out, you die, and you know for the rest of the game, and
just
it's fine.
Just testing the boundaries to see what you can and can't do.
Yeah, exactly.
So what kind of shows did you take this game to? I'm not sure what all they have over in Holland or over in Europe in general, but how much did you travel with this game?
Quite a lot. We didn't do all of the traveling ourselves, as Team 17, our publisher, also took the game places where we didn't personally attend, as Self-Made Miracle, so we could continue working on the game rather than being in planes and trains all the time. So we took it to, I think, the first GDC 2014 is where we first started pitching it. So it's not really an exhibition or anything, but we just took the game there on the laptop, and we had some appointments with publishers and platform holders, and showed it to them there, and showed it to fellow developers as well. I think the first show where it made an appearance, big appearance, might have been last year's Gamescom in Germany.
All right.
But it's also been on PAX. It's been on South by Southwest in the States. I think both PAXs last year, it's been there. It's been on a couple of EGX, Eurogamer Expos in London and in Birmingham. It's been in Holland on several sort of small indie showcase things.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's it about, like, yeah. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's always fun to see people play your game. And the first few times, it's absolutely terrifying. Like you've worked on this game, and maybe you've let a couple of friends play it, or like people who test out your games more often, but then suddenly the game's out there, you know? Like, it's not just yours anymore. It now sort of belongs to the people as well. But it's also really energizing.
What's the feedback been so far with the game officially releasing, but it's been in the hands of reviewers and streamers and idiots like me who do stupid podcasts? What's the response been so far that you've heard?
It's been pretty good. I mean, from the beginning, we sort of already figured that you would have people who would sort of love the game, and you would have people who absolutely hate the game because of that difficulty curve. And then you would have a big sort of group in between that might have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it. So far, what I've seen from Let's Players and streamers, they all seem to be very positive on it, and they also seem to be quite good in it. So I think that might relate to each other. And you see the reviewers or the players that just aren't that good at it, they tend to complain about the difficulty, and that costs you points in reviews, which I get. The only thing I don't really get is the people that just say, like, this game's pixel art. I hate pixel art per se, so I hate this game.
Yeah, that subset of gamers needs to just shut the hell up already. They're just, there's too many, another 2D indie game. I'm going to hate it automatically.
Personally, if you don't want to play it, that's fine. I'm not going to say, like, you should play it, or you should like pixel art, or you should like 2D platformers, or whatever. If you don't like it, that's fine. But, I mean, there's a lot of games I don't like. I'm not complaining about that on the internet. I just don't play them. And I think that for anybody who plays games or who likes to play games, the bigger your possible catalog is, the better, right? You can pick whatever you like.
Yeah.
I don't really get why people sort of try to drag you down in that way. Like, why is this on PS4? Why does my PS4 has 8-core processors? Why does a game like this being released on this system, you know?
So I'll be the first to admit that when it comes to games that are only available on the PS4 and I can't get it on the Xbox, I will be bummed and I might complain and I might ask why it's only on the PS4. But that's because I have a horrible history with the PS4.
Really?
I am on my 6th console.
Really?
Yes.
What did you do?
The first one had that blue light of death issue where it just would never start up and it had to be replaced. The next two, I believe, were overheating issues where they would just overheat and shut themselves off. I think it was one of them in there was a hard drive issue where the hard drive just completely crapped out. And then my 5th one actually started smoking.
That's not good.
Yeah, I paid for the extended 3-year warranty. And when the 5th one started smoking and I contacted Sony, they're like, oh, yeah, your extended warranty doesn't cover this. And I'm like, why? It's like, because it only covered one specific system, and that was your 2nd one that you only had for 4 days because it was defective out of the box.
What? So, I guess if your console picks up smoking, that's sort of his own his own risk there, right?
So yeah, now you'll understand why when I contacted you, I like specifically mentioned the Xbox One.
But that's fine. I think that's a completely different discussion from what we just talked about the pixel art or indie games in general. If you have a favorite platform to play on, I mean, I'm fine with that. That's also why we choose to release on basically all platforms. We're not doing the Nintendo stuff as of yet. Maybe later. I don't know. But that's more of a market issue. It has anything to do with the console itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes you have exclusives for obvious reasons because, you know, you might have a PlayStation exclusive because Sony funds the development of the game and they say, like, well, I want that 3-4 months at least exclusive on PlayStation. And that's why people can't release on other consoles.
No, I understand that stuff completely. Yeah. I mean, that's how some games get made. A game might not get made if a console manufacturer doesn't step in to help front some of the costs.
Yeah, exactly.
And I understand that. If it eventually comes to my console, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of games I've bought on both consoles just to support the developers because the game is cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still not happy with Sony. And I still bought number 6, so I'm the only one to blame in this.
That's dedication.
It's
man.
An abusive relationship and I just can't get away.
Yeah, I guess so.
But it's the only way to play some games, so if I ever want to play Final Fantasy 14 on a console, I kinda need a Sony platform.
Yep. Yep.
Oh man. So, what kind of games do you play? Like, one of our favorite questions when we talk to developers is when you were creating your game, what did you play in your off time to kind of decompress and relax from work?
Lots of stuff. I grew up as a kid playing whatever I could get my hands on, and I don't do it that much anymore. Like, there's a couple of genres I don't really play anymore, but I do a lot of strategy and simulation stuff. I like building things and managing systems and stuff like that. I also really like RPGs. Recently, I've been playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm. That's sort of been my my jam in the office as well. But while developing the game, like in my off time, so not games that I'm playing because I'm looking at them for possible references for Panarium or whatsoever.
Yeah, games that you just relax to, that you go home and you just fire up. It's like, time to relax.
I love the BioWare stuff. So if it's Mass Effect or Dragon Age, I'm throwing lots of hours in that. I think Dragon Age was also out when we were doing Panarium as well. It's just so many. Civilization 5, put hundreds of hours into that, I think. It's just XCOM as well. I really love XCOM. So it's just a lot of stuff. The only stuff that I don't really tend to play anymore, I won't say that I dislike it or anything. It's just like so many games coming out, I can't play everything, and I just sort of pick the genres that I like more. Are the sort of first-person action stuff. I don't know, Castlevania or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Those sort of games that I used to play that a lot as a kid, but they sort of lost their appeal to me in a way that I think I like to have a bit of freedom when I play a game, whether that's choosing how to build my city or choosing what my character looks like or choosing what kind of an approach I want to take in this game. And I often feel like those games, like Panarium as well, so they're designed by a designer that basically says, like, this is my sort of trap, and you have to win it in the way that I want you to win it.
So you hate your own game?
I hate my own game. No.
Are you just self-loathing? You're like, I hate these games, so I'm going to make one just like...
No, I think, like, what I love them when they're packaged in sort of a small package like Panarium is, or the sort of classic games from the 8-bit era were, or, for example, Super Crate Box from our next-door neighbors, Vlambeer, has been done. I like those when they're sort of like short play sessions. You just go in, you're bored. You have like 10, 20 minutes off and you go play the game a little bit and then you go do something else again. I think for that it's great, but I just can't sit down and play them for hours. That's sort of the thing.
Yeah, I understand that. And luckily Panarium has that feeling of just one more try. Okay, that was a stupid death. I could do this one more try.
Yeah, it's something we've been hearing a lot on the expositions and stuff as well, and it always made us really happy when people said that, because that's definitely the feeling that we wanted to go for.
Yeah, that's been my feeling with the game when I would play arcade mode, is just, well, I'm close to getting the number of coins to get another card.
All right.
One more round. Oh, that death was bullshit. I'm doing this again.
What's your current high score in arcade?
Oh, God, I'd have to fire up the game to look. I want to say, like, it's nothing impressive. I want to say, like, 300 or 400, maybe.
300 or 400, is that in coins or in barrels?
Oh, coins.
All right, so what's it in barrels?
Oh, God, now I definitely have to look it up. Give me one second, I'll grab a controller, I'll fire it up, and I'll check. Oh, thrilling podcast right here of Joe Cam firing up his Xbox to look at stats in a game.
In, man.
Now, I didn't get to put as much time into the game as I want, so I haven't had too much practice on it.
That's fine.
With how many games have been coming out lately, it's just this time of the year is insane.
And the next couple months is only going to be more and more, man.
Yeah, especially with the Rock Band coming out October 6th. That'll be my life right there.
Is that the one you're looking out for the most?
Yeah, pretty much. That one and then Fallout.
Yeah, Fallout for me as well. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Fallout's going to be nuts. But yeah, I've been a huge Rock Band guy. We're hopefully going to have some guys from Harmonix on again soon.
Oh, awesome. They're great guys.
Yeah, we've had them on our show a bunch of times, and for some reason, they keep coming back.
Maybe they like you.
It's
maybe,
crazy. Maybe. Oh, don't be silly. No one likes our show. Now I'm getting this crap where the system doesn't want to start the game up right away.
If it doesn't work, it's fine. We can just continue.
Oh, no, I'm in this now. I've gone too far to stop now. There's your logo, Self-Made Miracle, Team 17. How did you get involved with Team 17 anyway?
Twitter.
Twitter. Wow, that is loud.
I did a tweet at Team 17 because I read they were sort of starting up the business. I just asked, like, hey, at Team 17, you guys.
Your end is getting really quiet out of nowhere. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Right, it's getting really quiet for some reason.
Maybe it has something to do with your game sound.
Maybe.
Nothing's changed on my end.
Where do I see the high scores?
You have to go into arcade and then die one time.
Oh, okay. Arcade. Hey, look, there's the ground. Dead.
Yes.
Personal best is 41 barrels.
That's not too bad. Not too bad. If you haven't put a lot of time in it yet, then that is certainly not too bad.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the volume from the game is what was throwing off Skype.
Yeah, it could have been.
Because it just got really quiet there for a second. I couldn't hear anything you were saying.
I'll just repeat it then. You were asking about how we got into contact with Team 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's about a little under 2 years ago, I think, we contacted them first. They were just starting up their publishing business at that time. I think they had released like one or two games that were not developed by themselves at that point. So I sent them a tweet saying like, hey, at Team 17, I have a game. Would you be interested in publishing it? And they set me up an email address and we basically started communicating back and forth. And this was around the time of GDC 2014, where we were going to pitch the game to other publishers and platform holders as well. So we weren't betting on one horse. So I asked Team 17, are you guys in San Francisco so we can have a pitch over there? And they weren't, because they were finishing up their own game, Flockers, which was just coming out around that time.
Yeah, it's a fun game, too.
Yeah, I like it, especially on mobile. I think the mobile version is brilliant. So they weren't attending GDC themselves because of that. But they obviously knew that we were talking to other people as well, because we were because we went there. So as we were there and as we were talking to other publishers and platform holders, I just keep getting Skype messages from people within Team 17 saying like, hey, we know you're there. We know you're talking to other people, but we really like this game and we really want to do something with you guys. So please keep considering us. And eventually that dedication definitely paid off because we thought, well, if these people are so interested in our game, they must also be willing to put in a lot of work to make it something. And that's why we decided to sign with them in the end.
Nice. I do like that they're branching out and they're not just publishing Worms games anymore or whatever they make internally, that they're working with outside studios and getting more indie games out there.
Yep. Yeah, they're really growing big at it as well. I mean, I don't know the exact number of games they've signed so far, but I think it's quite a lot already.
Yeah, I think the big one is how they're signed on to publish Yooka-Laylee.
Yeah, definitely.
Which
yeah.
is pretty fantastic for them.
I talked a little bit about that with them when we were at Gamescom and we were having some food. And I said, like, how did you guys manage to sign that? And they didn't really want to tell too much about it. But I think there was just the sort of British connection. Like, both Rare and Team 17 are, like, really sort of long-lasting British development teams. And the guys doing Yooka-Laylee are, I think, ex-Rare for the most part.
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's where sort of the links come from. Like they know each other for years and years, and now that Team 17 is getting into publishing and they're doing a game, they probably reached out to each other. Though I'm actually quite kind of curious if they tried Rare themselves. If they said like, hey, Rare, would you be interested in seeing Yooka-Laylee being published as a Rare game?
Huh.
But I don't know. I don't know if that ever happened. And if they asked that, then why it didn't got signed or something like that. I have no idea. I'm just speculating now.
I would think if they went that route, they might have avoided that because it may have limited them to only being on the Xbox One.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a good one. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that might be the case, yeah. Team 17 is really strong about pushing your game to as many platforms as you can. And one of the things when we were talking, we also pitched to Nintendo at that GDC. And we didn't hear anything for months. And then after months, we certainly got an email saying like, hey, we might be interested in doing an NDS version for your game. And there was some talks about potentially having Nintendo give us some development budget, like not the whole game, not fund the whole game, but maybe help out a little bit in return for exclusivity. Nice. But that's already signed with Team 17 and we already have plans to release on all the other consoles as well. So we didn't really pursue that.
Because it looks like it'd be great to play on the Wii U.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely not ruling that out, but it kind of depends on how well the game is going to do on PC and the other consoles. and then how feasible it will be for us to take it to Wii or NDS or PS Vita as well.
That'd be pretty cool. I like playing games on my Vita. This looks like a fun pick up and play game on the Vita as well, if it were to make it there.
Yeah, we've been getting that a lot from people that have Vitas. They're like, why is this not on Vita? This just screams for a Vita version. There's one particular guy. We're in an incubator building here in Holland called the Dutch Game Garden. There's several game studios. So one of the guys from another studio has a Vita and is a real Vita fanatic. And he just comes in every day, basically asking us, like, when will this game be for Vita? And we just tell him, like, we haven't even started all the development yet. Get out. But who knows? Maybe it happens in the future.
Just comes in randomly. Is it on the Vita yet? Shut the fuck up, Frank. Get out of here.
Yeah, that's exactly what he does. Yeah.
Yeah, as much as I rag on the PS4, I absolutely love the Vita. It is such a fantastic handheld. It doesn't get nearly the love it deserves.
That's a great machine.
I mean, a lot of that is Sony's fault because they've kind of ignored it at this point. But third parties, and especially if you love RPGs, that is an RPG machine. So what kind of games do you play nowadays in your spare time?
Yeah, I briefly mentioned it before. I've been playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm. I've been quite of a Blizzard fan for a long time. I think back to Warcraft 2 or something like that. And they always set me up with Vita invites for whatever they do. I'm in that list, and I basically stayed in there forever. So I was never really big on the whole MOBA thing. Never really got to me. Whenever I looked at, like Dota or League of Legends gameplay, it just seemed like one big clusterfuck, and I didn't really understood anything that was going on. But since so many people were interested in it, I thought, like, well, there has to be something to it, right? And then when Heroes of the Storm came out, it sort of simplified that whole genre, made it a bit more of a sort of a brawly action game with strategical elements, and I really like that. So I've been playing that a lot with the other guys in the office as well. And besides that, I've been playing the new Shadowrun Hong Kong. I think that's great. I just love the Shadowrun reboots. They're not always, I sometimes think, like, their combat mechanics and stuff like that aren't that polished. They could be a bit better, especially if you just come off a game like XCOM or something like that.
Yeah.
But might not be fair, since XCOM has, like, I don't know, 10 times the budget Shadowrun has or something. So, but I just love the writing and the aesthetics and the whole vibe. It really brings this sort of weird cyberpunky world to life for me. And I can really just play the game, and then whenever I have to make a decision, just sit back for like 5 minutes and then think, like, what should I do? What will my character do? What kind of decision would I make? And then pick it. And I think that's a lot of fun. I'm waiting for the new Fallout. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that game, I cannot wait to get my hands on Fallout 4. It can't come soon enough in my eyes.
Well, we'll still have to wait a little while, though.
Yeah, I'll time travel. What else in the future are you looking forward to besides Fallout?
There's like the next couple of months, so many good games. Well, at least I hope they're going to be good games. They're going to come out.
There's so many mediocre games that are going to be patched to be slightly better and then have a bunch of DLC.
Yeah, exactly. XCOM 2 is also coming out, I think. I think still this year, right? I don't know. But I'm looking forward to that, as I'm just a huge XCOM geek. The thing I like about it is how you have the permadeath with your soldiers. And I tend to name all of my soldiers after my Facebook friends to make it a little bit more personal. So sometimes I have to choose between, like, my best friend, which is like a rookie soldier, or like a guy that I know from high school or whatsoever, that's like a really good soldier, and I know that one of the two of them is going to die. And normally you would always let the rookie die, right? Because he's not that valuable to you as the expert soldier. But in this case, I'm like, yeah, but that guy's my best friend, you know? I don't want him to die, so I might just sacrifice the other guy.
Oh, man.
So I think that's a really fun way to play the game.
That's a really good way to look at games with permadeath, is to name them all after good friends.
Yeah, I did that with Sheltered as well, the game Team 17 published, where you run this little family in this nuclear shelter underground. And I named them after friends and stuff as well. I think I named them after my sister's family, actually, because you have like a father, a mother, and two kids, and a pet. which is exactly my sister's family.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, like, my sister had to eat her own kid to survive. And that's it's weird.
That makes for an awkward family reunion.
I haven't told her. I don't think I'm not planning on telling her as well. I don't know how she'll react to that.
Don't worry, she'll never hear this podcast, so you're safe. No one's going to listen to this show. No one ever does.
What are you into? What are you playing mainly nowadays?
God, right now I have been shuffling and juggling a whole bunch of different games with all these indie releases that have been coming out. I've been putting a lot of time into Forza 6 because right. I'm huge on the Forza games, and Forza 6 is amazing. With the new patch that recently came out, I've been getting back into Diablo 3 a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
This people are going to laugh at this one, but Frozen Freefall Snowball Fight, like that shitty mobile game, like Match 3 Gem game.
All right.
About the Disney movie Frozen.
Does it have the soundtrack playing as well?
No, thank God, because I might have jabbed my ears out. But it's a Match 3 game on the Xbox One that's free to play, so what the hell? Why not? It's good to kill time. I got 10 minutes to kill. Let me just kill it with this. I've been a champion of the game Quest of Dungeons that just came out for the Xbox One. For weeks now, I've been talking about this game, and if anyone out there still hasn't tried Quest of Dungeons, you really, really need to, because it is fantastic. What else have I been? Plague Incorporated. Plague Inc. just came out on Xbox One, and I'm having a lot of fun with that. Oh, man, too many games. Too many.
There are so many games, yes. Do you think that there will be sort of a third game industry bubble coming up? It's also been something that sort of developers have been talking a lot about these days.
Like another crash, like the E.T. Yeah. days?
Yeah, exactly. And then you have one later again, I think, like around the NES days somewhere.
Oh, man. I don't know if they're... If anything, it's going to be a change in how they're sold. I think the physical bubble might pop soon,
mm-hmm.
because people are getting sick and tired of GameStop controlling everything, at least in America. I'm not sure what it's like over in Europe, but...
It's a little bit different over here. We don't have a chain that's that big on selling games. We have a few, but there's a bit more competition on the market than there is in America, I think.
Yeah, in America, it's basically... all GameStop all the time. There are alternatives. I've been buying most of my games at Best Buy. I'm not sure if they have mm-hmm. them over there.
No, I don't think so, but I know it from my visits to the United States.
Yeah, they have a program where you pay $30 for a 2-year membership and you get 20% off of all new games.
Oh, that's not bad.
So, and even big stuff like Rock Band 4, the big bundle with all the instruments is $250.
You get complete 20% of that.
20% off is $50 off the bundle. So
that's
that
pretty.
It already paid for itself.
Yeah. We are making a commercial for GameStop, for Best Buy now. I mean.
Are you?
No, I think so, the way we're talking about this. But I'm fine with it. It doesn't matter.
I thought you guys were doing one yourself. Like me, I wish I could get a sponsorship. My one co-host has been joking around that we're going to get a Domino's sponsorship someday. And I'm like, I will... definitely sit here and say the SML podcast is brought to you by Domino's Pizza. I will whore myself out to anybody. You come at me with free pizza and I'm yours. I will be your nice. Bitch. I don't even care.
At least you're being honest about it.
Hey, what can you do? We're just looking for a way to get bigger into the podcast market. It's a tough market.
Yeah, obviously that's a commercial world as well in the end, right?
Hey, this episode is your commercial.
Oh, yeah. Buy Panarium. I almost forgot about that.
Buy Panarium at Best Buy.
Yeah.
And get some Domino's pizza on your way home.
Exactly.
Oh, man. But yeah, there's just way too much coming out, way too much to play. I think my big ones for the year are going to be Rock Band, Fallout, Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii U is looking amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, Halo 5. I'm still big into my Halo game, so
I've never been that big on Halo. It sort of never really got a hold of me. But I think at the time the original Halo came out for the first Xbox, I was very dedicated sort of PC FPS guy. I was like one of those guys that said like shooters on a console will never work. Never work. And well, they did pretty well.
And look how wrong you are.
Selling better than most PC shooters nowadays. I guess I was wrong, but I was like, what, 12 years old or something? So I think I'm allowed to be wrong at that age about stuff like that.
I'm trying to think how old I was when Halo came out. Probably like 20. I feel so old. Oh, I'm getting old. I'm 34.
34. I'm 25 now.
Oh, my God. You're so young.
Yeah.
I'm talking to a child on the podcast.
I'm actually Willy. That's actually me.
You're young Willy. I'm future Willy.
Yeah, perhaps. But then at least Willy survived, if that's the case, since you're still alive. Yeah.
I am the future of Willy. I have significantly less hair. Still got the beer belly. The scar mysteriously disappeared.
So. Oh, that's futuristic medicine and stuff like that. Takes care of that.
It's a crazy world that we're living in.
Yeah.
Welcome to the future. All right. Well, we're coming up on about 45 minutes or so here. Is anything else you want to talk about?
I don't know. I don't think I have anything that I really need to get off my chest. Or something like that.
Anything personal you want to talk about? How are things at home?
No, it's fine, actually. It's fine.
All right. Well, I guess thanks for coming on. It's been a blast talking with you.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Thank you for having me.
I'll let you whore out your game one more time if you want to give everyone the spiel again, tell you where they could find you, give out your Twitter, your email, your social security number, whatever you want to do.
Yep. So, Panarium is out today for PC, Mac, Linux, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. It's $10 US, €9 in Europe. Has a free trial version, comes with it. So if you're not sure whether you want to spend your money on it or not, just go ahead, download the free trial version, have a go. And if you like it, you can still buy it. If you don't like it, go buy something else.
It's awesome that you guys are putting out a free trial with the game. Not enough games are offering trials or demos these days. Yeah. And I applaud you for putting out a free trial of the game.
I think I really have to give that credit to Team 17 because it was really their idea. They came up with it not that long ago. I think like maybe just like 2 months ago or something. Like we almost had everything done. And they said like, guys, we need to make a demo because, I mean, the main hook of Panarium is the gameplay. Like we can make flashy trailers and we can put nice screenshots up, but you still don't really get what the game's all about when you see a video or see a screenshot. So we really wanted to get people hooked by just playing it rather than looking at screenshots and stuff like that. So they said like we have to leverage that. We have to do free trial versions on all platforms so people can just have a look, get a taste of the gameplay, see why it's awesome, and then go buy it. Because otherwise they might not when they see the screenshots or just the trailer.
Yeah, a lot of games, you just don't know how it's going to be until you get your hands on it. And that's one of the things that developers aren't doing these days. They're not letting people get their hands on it and try it.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, is your demo... we're wrapping it up and now I'm asking more questions. Is your demo a dedicated demo or is it a timed trial of the full game?
No, it's a real demo. It locks your campaign to like the first 5 levels. And it allows you to pick up, not sure, because it might be a little bit different across platforms as well, but I think it allows you to pick up 30 barrels in arcade mode, and then it sort of cuts you off. So it's like, if you want to set a high score, you'll have to buy the full game to keep on doing that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because I know some, like the trials today, some people make actual dedicated demos, and then I've seen a bunch of games come out where it's like free trial, and it's the full game, you could earn achievements and all of that, but it locks you to 30 minutes of game time or an hour or whatever it is.
Yeah, we were looking at doing that as well initially. But I just think for Panarium, if you give a free hour of Panarium away, that's quite a lot for a game of this size. So we thought like we're giving away too much at that point. People might just play for the hour and think like, oh, nice, and not buy the game anymore after that. But on the other hand, if you give people like 10 minutes or something like that, I mean, that's way too less. They'll just die horribly a lot of times. And just when they're starting to get the hang of it, they'll have to stop. And then they might feel cheated as well. They'd be like, yeah, well, fuck this. So that's why we, so that's why we decided to go with this dedicated demo over the time trial thing, because I think it's the best balance between, I mean, obviously demos are there for sort of two ways. We as developers or publishers want people to buy the game when they play the demo. While gamers want to have a sort of a free shot at the game.
Yeah.
But there's sort of two agendas at work there. And I think it's about getting those to come together in the best possible way, so the gamers still enjoy the demo and will still be triggered to buy the full game. I hope we pull that off. I don't know. Time will tell. It's the first time we did such a thing as well.
Well, I hope it pays off for you. It's always difficult finding that balance between, oh, I played enough of this game, I don't need to buy it, and fuck this game, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm hoping it works out for you guys. I think the game is awesome. It is addictive. It is difficult. It'll keep you coming back for more while having you curse the game and its creators to hell for all eternity. You guys just knocked it out of the park, I think. It's just a lot of fun.
Thanks. That means a lot.
So I hope the launch goes well for you guys, and I thank you again for coming on. And if you have any final words or a closing little one-liner to our audience, the floor is yours.
The only thing I'd say is just go check out the game. There's a free, as we just said, there's a free trial version, so you don't really have a reason not to. Just go check it out, and if you like it, buy it, and you know, have fun, try to become the best on the leaderboards.
They don't have a reason unless they're a dick.
Those are your words, but I agree.
Don't be a dick. Go try Panarium. It has a free demo. So again, don't be a dick, people. What's up, everyone? This is Joe, my guest at this time, calling all the way from Belgium, a member of Crazy Monkey Studios, is Ben. Would you like to introduce yourself to us?
Yeah, hello, everyone. My name is Benjamin. I worked the last couple of years on Guns, Gore & Cannoli, which will be available on the Xbox One tomorrow. And I'm an artist, game designer, so yeah, that's basically it.
All right. For anyone who doesn't know what Guns, Gore, and Cannoli is, which, by the way, I absolutely love the title of the game, for someone who doesn't know what it is, give us the sales pitch about what the game is.
Okay, here we go. The game is it's a 2D action platformer. It's set in the 1920s. The story is about the mafia who made in those days during Prohibition, who made some bad hooch, and that turned everyone, the whole city, into zombies. Because, and you would say a whole city that's drinking alcohol. Okay, that's crazy. But the event is right after St. Patrick's Day, so. There were a lot of drunk people, and everybody turned into zombies. And you play as Vinnie Cannoli, who's the main character. And you arrive at the city on order of a mob boss, and you have to find a friend of the family. But there are other mob clans and the army who's trying to stop you, and because they all have their secret agenda, because it's there's a whole twist to the plot and all. So basically, you have to fight against everyone you meet.
Now,
what
made you think of this story? It seems odd to me that someone from Belgium would think of a story in American Prohibition area, and it's something that doesn't really get covered much. The 20s aren't really a haven for game stories. So what made you guys think of this time period to do this game?
Actually, it's kind of a personal interest in the period, I guess, from my part then. But I studied animation film at school, and yeah, we got this idea about the bootlegging and the moonshining, and we thought it would be funny to make that the cause of people turning into zombies, because in most zombie movies there's not really an exact cause. So and the period and the time, yeah. I don't know. It's easier to make a game or a film that's set in a certain era, I guess, because the film noir and the mood settings. We wanted to create this atmosphere of dark alleys and the old dark bars and that kind of stuff. So. It gives an angle to the story, and we hope that that it would be an attraction, that people would get what I mean. They would get excited about it.
I really do like the setting. It's a really unique setting for a game. The closest I could think of would be Saboteur, but even that is like the 40s over in Europe, and just having 20 style mobsters and just the script is fantastic, where you have, what's your friggin' problem? I love it. The script could have used more son of a bitches in there. Of a bitch. What do you, where's my friggin' cannoli, you son of a bitch?
We tried to be easy on the foul language, because the H ratings these days, they make it difficult, when you in Europe, you go to probably you heard of Gamescom. It's like the biggest game event in Europe.
Oh yeah,
and it's in Germany, and they have a very, very, very tight H rating law there. So the game was already too violent and too nasty, so we had to like block our screens and all. So it's really hard to show something if you can't show it to the public, if you have to lock your booth down so nobody can see the screens, and if you use too much language that can't pass the age ratings, then yeah. So well, we try to keep it simple. It actually, you know, you always use like this friggin' cannoli and open the friggin' door and that kind of stuff as an alternative. So,
well, luckily for our show, we have no age rating, so you could say and do whatever you want on our show.
Oh, great! Yeah.
See, if you would just show it off in America, you wouldn't have to worry, because violence and bad language is fully acceptable over in America. You just can't show any nudity. That's when we cry.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. That's less of a problem here. So.
So you said you're the animator. I'm guessing you did all the character designs and all the animation in the game.
Actually, I did the character design and the special effects. The character animation was done by my brother. So he's a kind of an animation specialist. So he did the animations of the people. The animations of like explosions and gunfire and that kind of stuff and the fire and all. That's what I do. So, and also the backgrounds, of course. Everything that has to do with the art.
Nice. So, I absolutely love the visual style of the game. The first time I fired the game up, it made me think of the old Hothead Penny Arcade games, the first two Penny Arcade games that came out on PS3 and Xbox 360.
Yeah.
It's just the visual style. It reminded me of that, and I immediately fell in love with the visuals.
Great. Yeah, actually, when I was a kid, then we played Metal Slug in the arcade halls, and that was like my biggest inspiration at that moment. Was like, oh my god, this game is so fun to even watch, and even when you're not playing, and you can watch the characters do some stuff, and you just wait before you shoot them, and that's kind of a vibe that we try to recreate in our game, you know.
No, I think it's, you nailed it completely.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, well, it was a lot of work, so we really tried to make an effort to make that to put all the small details and elements and Easter eggs in there to make it more fun. Actually, it was a lot of fun making the game, so I guess it counts for something.
I love some of the death animations too, like when enemies burn up in fire and just seeing their skeleton crumble and the screams, or when they get killed by acid or the poison clouds and the skin melts off their bone. It's gorgeous. It is absolutely beautiful game.
Yeah, that's actually very, very hard for the processor of the computer, because it's all spreadsheets, and in the beginning we kind of went loose, like a loose cannon, animating all those things, and it was like 50 frames, and the programmers they started saying, "Well, guys, what are you doing? This is too much. You have to cut down. It's too much. even for a 2D game, you can't do this. It's using too much memory." So, we tried to minimize it, but it was, for us, it was it had to be in there. That was it. We didn't want any particle effects or something, and we wanted real animation. So, people always love that about the game. That's something they always point out, that the animations, it make it feel like it's a playable cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was just going to say. And you said you did this with your brother, right?
Yeah, the art style, the art, it's with my brother, and the programming and all, that's done by the two other guys from Paul and Steven. So, it's four people, actually. I guess it's a small team for for what we did, because yeah, everybody has to do everything, actually.
Yeah, for only four people, the game is just absolutely fantastic. Out of all the interviews I've been doing recently and all the games I've been playing ahead of time or all the recent indie games coming out, this is easily near the top of my list. In fact, one of my friends, he's a YouTube streamer by the name of Shiz Blacka. I asked him if he had any questions for you guys because he got to play the game a little early, too. He said, "I don't have any questions, but please give them a hand job for me." So okay. He also appreciates the game.
That's great, but he can give the hand job to someone else.
I told him I'm not sure how to handle that over Skype, so I'm just letting you know that was his idea. So, so how long did it take to make the game?
Come again?
How long did it take to make the game? I heard you say that it was something you did over a few years.
Yeah, actually, it's a whole story, actually. But we started the full process of this how the game is now in the beginning of 2014. So that's a year and like 8 months till now. So or 9 months even. So it's not 2 years, but my brother and me, we started working a couple of years ago on a few levels and animations, but everything was sprite based. So we did a lot of work before, but it became very unrealizable fast. So we had to let that sink in for a few years before we could say, okay, we have to throw everything away and do it all again. So. But after a couple of years, we got the spirit back, and with the other guys who are great programmers, so they said, okay, this is how we're gonna do it, and this is how it will work. So if you guys are up to it, then let's do it together. So yeah, but if you count the overall development process, yeah, that's more than 2 years. For me and my brother, so, but the team, the four team of four people, we started like a year and a half ago, and the game is out on Steam already. So the most of the work now is like promotional and marketing and the porting to Xbox and also PlayStation. So that's a lot of work.
So you say it's out on Steam now. By the time this episode airs tomorrow, the game will have already released, I would assume, on Xbox. What's the release date for PlayStation?
Oh, yeah, I can't say that. It's it depends, actually, on how smooth the certification process with PlayStation goes. So how many times they send it back to the drawing board. They say, okay. They most of the time don't give all the glitches or the things that are wrong. So you send the game and they say, okay, this is wrong. And then you send it back and, okay, this is also wrong. And then instead of checking everything, of course, but I guess, yeah, that's how it goes. That's the same process we had to do with the Xbox. But yeah, that was a bit easier. They were less demanding. So actually, we're at full... we're working on the PlayStation version right now, so
so it basically just comes down to when Sony's done nitpicking.
Yeah, and then we have to pick a date, so you can't just say, okay, we'll release on Christmas, because it's probably the worst time ever for an indie developer. But then there's January and February, and those are like slow months also. People don't have any money anymore after the after the holidays, so it's actually never a good time. So in our mind, it's just the faster we can release it, the better. So yeah, I hope within a month or 2 months, probably.
All right, least it's out now on Steam and Xbox, so people can still pick it up now and enjoy the hell out of it now.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, the best option, of course, is to release on all platforms together, of course, I guess. But that's also a very, very heavy marketing campaign, because we try to do most of the marketing ourselves, because otherwise it's just an immense budget you have to spend. And so yeah, you probably got a key from Steven. Probably, yeah, that's the main that's the one of the programmers. So it's our own team that's distributing review keys and contacting websites and also.
Yeah, I got a copy from him, and we also got two extras to give out to our listeners. So you could always win one from us if you don't want to, you know, track it down in the store or wait for a release that's, I guess, already happened now. But you could still get a copy from us, thanks to the awesome guys we're talking to now.
Yeah, that's right. So whoever gets the keys, enjoy it, I would say. Because the other people, they'll have to buy it. But it's only $10, around $10, so it's $9.99. So I hope that's a fair deal for the gamers.
I will absolutely say it is definitely worth $10. I would have paid $15 for this game, but $10 is an absolute bargain, and everybody needs to buy it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I will shamelessly whore out any game I think is worth people buying, and this is definitely one of those that I think needs to be picked up by everyone.
Yeah, we hope so too. We hope so too. Xbox, there aren't too many games yet on Xbox One Store, I would say, but I heard they're going to release a bunch of the 360 console. So then there will be a lot of more games on the Xbox One Store. So, but now, yeah, if you come across it in the store, don't hesitate to buy it, I would say.
Listen to the man. He knows what he's talking about. If you see it in the store, buy it.
Yeah, that's right.
So is this the first game that your company released, or have you done any other like Steam or mobile games, anything like that?
Yeah, we did a couple of mobile games, but this is the first large project, actually. So the first game that we released for on Steam, and also it's the first Belgian game that's going to get released on Xbox One. So for us, it's great news, actually. It's a nice, how would you say it? It's great news for our country, I guess.
Well, congrats on being the first.
Yeah, well, it's a small country, so there aren't too many developers.
Maybe this will light a fire under their asses to start developing games and getting them out on Xbox and PlayStation.
Yeah, I hope, yeah. But there's kind of a race that we know a couple of developers who are also going to release a game on Xbox and PlayStation. So I guess it's like within a month or 2 months there will be a couple of more games. But yeah, somebody's got to go first. So I'm
nice.
Glad
to get in touch with them. We'll talk to them and put them on the air.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
So what made you call your studio Crazy Monkey Studio? Because that's one of the best studio names I've heard.
I'll tell Steven that, because it's him who came up with the name even before we worked together. So actually, I'm not I don't really know how they came up with it. They just thought, yeah, we need something that rings like that has a nice ring to it, and that doesn't sound too serious. You want to make fun games. So, yeah, there are a lot of fun, strange developer companies that have fun names. So, but I guess you'll have to ask Steven, because he never gives a straight answer to that. He always says, yeah, well, we are developers who are a little bananas, so
where it comes bananas, from. Monkey. So, one of our favorite questions to ask developers is, while you were developing your game, what other games did you guys play to kind of take a break from work and just kind of decompress and relax after you're done working?
What games? I love to play Left 4 Dead, so it was good stress relief. And I played Shank too, yeah. But that was more for like inspiration, so it's more work related because it's a 2D game, you know. And then I played a couple of games. Actually, the most games I played were more to get some inspiration for our own game. The games I loved playing are like the Left 4 Dead series and Max Payne. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Nice. We've actually heard Left 4 Dead from some other developers before, so it seems that one, as well as games like Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, those seem to be popular among developers.
Yeah. I must say, during the development process, it's so much work. You don't have a lot of time to play a lot of games, you know. So it's kind of something. We all say to each other, "Yeah, we should play more games because how do you say it in English? We're losing track of what other people do, you know, and what's out there and what's popular on the market. And you should see how other people do a lot of things before you start trying to invent things that all are already there. So, I'd love to play more games, but it's just I don't have time. Well, so when you can play Left 4 Dead, it's like. I always played like the last stand, final chapters of the levels, and that's like 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and it's a lot of action and it's very tense. So that's a great stress relief for me. So yeah,
nice. You mentioned Shank for inspiration, which Clay did an awesome job with the Shank series and pretty much every game they put out. What other games did you use as inspiration for this one?
Well, we did, as I said before, Metal Slug was actually a big inspiration, but it's a very old game, so...
Still good, though. Metal Slug will always be a favorite.
Yeah, it's a classic, so... it's old graphics, and they're very pixelated, but as an artist, I can see how it would look when it would be in full HD. It's actually it must have been so much work to make that game in those days. But other games, yeah, you know, we tried looking a lot for 2D games, so I played Deadlight, which is also a side scroller, but the Max Payne series and the Mafia series, of course, that are also one of my favorite genres. So those were great inspirations, actually, especially Max Payne. I loved the thing I loved about Max Payne was in the first and the second game, especially, was you could hear always if you snuck up to the mobsters, they were also like having those silly conversations, and that took like minutes about the stories they had, and it was so funny. Yeah, that was something we tried to do also, but it's harder in 2D, you know. It's a run-and-gun game, and it has to be fast, so you can't sneak up to the people, you know. But,
So your game is packed with weapons. What is there, 10 different weapons? 12? 10, 12? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Well, if I can check it out here.
I want to say there's 10.
Yeah, I think 10 weapons, and then like there is also the Molotov and the grenades. So yeah. Around 12.
What made you think of some of those weapons? Like, you have basic things like a handgun, a magnum, shotguns, and then you have some weird shit like a flamethrower, and then that Tesla coil gun, whatever it is.
Yeah. The flamethrower. I guess it's a classic needed in a game, in a zombie game. You know, if you want to light something on fire, then if you had the flame and the Molotov burning animation, yeah, we could easily do the flamethrower. So it's the same effect. So we said, yeah, let's put it in. It's, people love flamethrowers.
I will say the flamethrower is amazing for crowd control. When you're going through the sewers and you have like 10 rats attacking you at once, one flamethrower is going to wreck all of them.
Yeah, that's the advantage of being in a 2D world. So everything that's in front of you, you can just mow it down without having to turn around or something. And the Tesla coil gun, the advantage that it has is that it searches its enemies. Yeah? It searches its targets. So actually, that was kind of... We came up with that because I read some stories about the 1920s and 1910 about this guy, Nikola Tesla, and with this electricity that he tried to, without wires, he tried to transfer electricity from one bolt to the other. And that's actually what the image of the gun was based on. I tried to, work that into the... In the art style, also the laboratory where you come across in the game has those kind of things, and I put all the old style light bulbs on it to make it more like 1920s invented game a tool that's invented in the 1920s.
Yeah, there's a lot of attention to detail in the game, which I like.
Yeah, that's what my job is, of course, putting detail and art in it. But you easily get carried away with it because in the beginning, it's the first game, a 2D side-scrolling game that I did myself. So in the beginning, it was very hard to do like the perspective. You know, when you have an image, you can draw perspective, but when the screen has to scroll to the side, that perspective doesn't work anymore. So you have to make everything look like it's always right, in right perspective, and that was very hard to do in the beginning, but you can fake a lot of things with the lighting and lines on the floor Yeah, I love to do nice artwork. I get carried away with it.
Like I said, the game is absolutely gorgeous. Everything has that wonderful hand-drawn look. The weapons are fantastic. Is there any kind of weapons that you guys were in the planning stages but didn't make it into the game?
Yeah, there were two guns that didn't make it in the game. There was a Springfield rifle from that soldiers used in the First World War that we didn't get in the game. They had a bayonet in it. And normally the soldiers, you come across soldiers in the game, they had to have those guns with the rifles and with the bayonets in it. But actually it didn't add really much to the gameplay, so we just left it out also for time reasons. And then the second gun that we didn't use was a sonic blaster, but I have art from it and it looks very futuristic, so it was kind of it didn't fit with the rest of the game. And what will the gun do? The point was that you had to charge the gun and then shoot it, and it would like send a sound wave starting from the center of the screen that would circle around you, and then every guy's head would pop. You know, like
it would. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. But it seemed too powerful, so the main programmer said, can't do that. It's going to be too powerful.
Well, there's an idea for a sequel. You know, aliens from the future invade the 20s, and now that's a weapon for Guns, Gore, and Cannoli 2.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. Cannoli
harder.
Yeah.
I would love to do a sequel, actually. There are so many things that didn't make it to the game, like riding a car or flying a plane or something, and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of inspiration that we could do. And also aliens, in the beginning that was kind of the idea that aliens contaminated the booze or something. To make it even more weirder, you know, zombies in the 1920s, and then at the end it would turn out to be aliens or something. But we just stuck to what we had. So,
well, even if a sequel doesn't happen, you could do a DLC like mini campaign. You could bring the aliens back. You could bring the Sonic Blaster back.
Yeah. You would have to put that all in the game and do all the animations. Problem with that thing was because I also wanted to do like DLC from with extra guns and all and new zombies, but we would have to rebalance the game from the beginning, you know. So we actually chose more for the versus, you know, there's a versus mode in the game for when you finish the campaign mode, so you can play against one another or against AI. And actually, that's the DLC, actually. That's already in the game. Because on Steam, where the game is available right now, they don't have that yet. So that will be made available together with the release on Xbox.
Nice.
And it will be a free update, so just want to thank people who are already bought it. And
how have the sales been on Steam?
It's been okay, but Steam is a very overloaded platform these days. There are a lot of titles.
I can imagine games can easily get lost in the shuffle on Steam. At least on console, there's not as much shovelware getting thrown on the system, and things could stand out a bit more.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, I hope. It's not out yet, so I'm not going to make any assumptions how the sales are going to be, but that's our idea too. When you compare it to the releases on Steam, as you said, it's a lot of shovelware. There's like 30 games a day releasing on Steam, and on Xbox, I've been told it's more like 3 games a week or something that get released.
It's picked up quite a bit in the past few weeks. There's been a lot of games coming out, but I think it's just that time of the season where more games are going to start coming out. But yeah, for the most part, there's definitely not as big a stream of games on console.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. I talked to some curators on Steam, and they said, yeah, we can't keep track of all the emails and all the keys we get for review. So it's so much these days that everybody actually could say to developers that they're a reviewer, and people are happy to hand out keys to get attention, actually. And if you have an online game that's meant to play like against each other online, then it's best to give out hundreds or even thousands of keys to get a big community and to get a lot of players playing together. So because if there's no one there, then the game dies very fast, I guess.
No, I'm glad you guys believe me when I said that I do podcasts.
Yeah, well, we check most of the people a bit.
It's not a good podcast, but.
Well, it's something, okay?
I'm just determined. It's been 2.5 years. We've been terrible the whole time, but I still like doing it because I'm bored.
Okay. Well, actually, it's I always think it's when review websites don't have that much readers, it's always good to get first hand attention, you know. like you get to talk with the developer and get the information from first hand. So that's always better than a review website where millions of people come across every month. But yeah, the article about a small indie game, it gets stuffed somewhere on a side page and nobody reads it. So I guess when 10 or 100 people hear it from the developer itself or get a video from someone and a few people buy it, then it's worth the time.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I love doing these interviews, is because in a normal episode, we could talk about a game and we might spend 5-10 minutes talking about a new release that came out, that we played it, that we had fun with it. Oh, you should check it out. You should buy it. But when I spend, you know, half hour, 40, 50 minutes talking one-on-one with a developer, this is all attention directly to that single game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And especially games that I like Guns, Gore, and Cannoli. I mean, I love dedicating time to talking about these great games that some people might just gloss over or miss.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, if you would have sent a mail and I hate the game, but can we do an interview? I probably would have passed. So.
Oh, so I guess I should keep lying and saying it's a good game.
Please do. No, I lots of people. Most people. There aren't many people that that say yeah, I hate it. So most of the comments are pretty positive. So yeah, and. If they don't like it, it's more the art style is pretty specific, and it's kind of perhaps European art style or something. But it's always been a nice plus. I guess lots of people. That's the first thing they see, and that we hope that draws enough attention. So, and if you don't like it, then yeah. It's normal, I guess. Nobody likes everything.
You could like yell at people. Like, if you don't like my game, you could go fuck yourself.
Well, actually, you know, there are lots of games that I don't like that are big, that have huge sales. So, and I don't get it. You know, why has this game so much sales? I don't get it. It's ugly. And then. Yeah, the programmer, our main programmer, he thinks in, you know, in numbers and in squares and the prototype things. And he says, yeah, I play with squares. And when it's fun, it's fun. And the graphics don't matter. So you have to look at it from both ways, you know.
So what big games are there that you don't like?
Big games? Well...
games that you don't understand that are selling well. Because for me, Call of Duty franchise could go to hell. Like, I don't know why those things still exist.
Yeah, there was a time that I loved playing one of those games, but it sometimes seems like they just re-release the game but with better graphics and, okay, it changes the gameplay but a little bit, but...
And sometimes the graphics aren't even changed that much.
No, it's they can't make it more realisticer than more realistic, you know. there's a point that it doesn't help anymore, you know. Instead of going in 3D or with virtual reality or something, to get the gamer more into the battle scene, but yeah, you know, there are games that just seem like it's over and over the same again, you know?
Yeah. So, back to your game. I do admit I have one minor gripe with the game, and it's probably just because I'm getting older and I'm getting worse at games, but this game is friggin' hard.
Well, you can put it on easy, you know?
I did. I was playing on easy, and some of those later stages were still giving me a tough time. It's just... you'll get swarmed by enemies and you're stuck reloading. You're trying to kick everyone off you, but it's not helping. And it's a tough game.
Yeah, actually you have to, as a developer, it's not easy you know, to keep track of how hard you just made it, because you made it yourself. You know exactly what enemy is going to do. You know the enemy types very well, so you can anticipate everything. But yeah, you can also add cheats, but I don't know if that works on Xbox. Although, oh yeah, yeah, you do, you do. I just remembered.
There's so, cheats on the Xbox version?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Oh, really?
And yeah, somebody put it, the programmer put it in. I know that what the cheat code for Steam is, but yeah, it's something that's very common. I remember, but I don't know. Just when I see them do it, it's just like they're pushing all the buttons together or something.
Is it the Konami code? Up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right?
I guess it's something like that, yeah. You should...
Man,
you can try it.
I'm going to have to dig around and see if I could find this.
Yeah, you should.
Or you could just send me an email later and we'll keep it a secret.
I can do that, yeah.
There's no cheats, kids. Just ignore everything we just talked about.
Well, actually, cheats doesn't there's an option menu, you know, you can make it as cheatable as you wish, you know, you can say you don't have to reload or have all the bullets you want or don't get hold back when enemies grab you, but I guess, yeah, that makes it... I was a cheater when I played games when I was young, you know, I always... look for cheats, and I would just want to rush as fast through the game as possible. But when you make a game, yeah, that's such a waste. You think, no, don't just rush by them. It's so much fun to kill everyone.
Well, I played it the right way first. I love cheats as long as you play the game once the right way. And then from then on, you just want to go through and murder everything and have fun.
I agree. But actually, yeah, some levels are harder, yeah. What levels did you have problems with at the end, probably?
The sewers was definitely one of them because of all the rats there.
The jumping rats are bitch.
They're dicks. I hate those guys. Yeah. Friggin' rats.
Yeah.
I don't want to... The final boss fight, I don't want to say exactly what, so I don't ruin it for anyone, but the final boss fight... I died a bunch of times on there, but I did make it through.
Yeah, there's three stages. So the first stage can seem the hardest, I guess? What stage?
And then, well, the first one was a pain because of all the other zombies that would come out. And then because of the hook swinging from the
hook swinging,
boss
yeah,
I don't want to talk about.
Yeah, I actually I myself my brother and the main programmer they came up with the pattern that the boss has, you know, and they let me play it, and I had the same feeling that you probably had. It's like fun, like what the fuck did you guys did do? I can't just and then they say, oh man, how stupid are you? Just learn the pattern, see, and you're always doing the same. You're always doing the same. My brother is very hard on me always. So the other guys always laugh when when he tells me how not to do it. So, and then I started watching. Okay, yeah, he always goes that way and then that way, and you just have to stay focused on avoiding and easily jumping over a thing without trying to get somewhere in a hole that gets you stuck. And
yeah, I will say it was satisfying as hell when I finally beat it, and the ending cinematic was definitely worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was what we were aiming for. At the end, the bad guy really gets...
Because that little son of a bitch pissed me off the whole friggin' game.
Yeah, well, he gets what's coming to him, I guess.
Definitely.
We were scared about the age rating at the end because, you know, the guy just, yeah, he's unarmed. And
He deserved it.
We wanted to point out how Vinny and the main character, you know, how his mind is going. He's a gangster. He's actually a bad guy. So he just thinks, okay, I need this money and I need this guy, and I want to get the hell out of here. So okay, everyone is oozing away. Yeah, tough luck. Get out of my way.
Yeah, unarmed or not, fuck that guy. He deserved it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we had a lot of fun coming up with the dialogue. So,
yeah, it was definitely a blast to play, and I'm super excited that I got you to come on the show. We were talking before the recording started, but when I first sent the emails, I forget who I was talking with. I feel terrible.
Steven.
Yeah, no. Steven. I'm sorry. I've been emailing so many people lately, but Steven said that because it's only four guys and the release is there, you guys are really busy, an interview probably wouldn't happen. I'm glad that I asked again and I did get you on the show because I've been so excited to talk about this game because I've had so much fun with it.
Okay, yeah, great. Well, it was great talking to you. It's always great to be able to talk about something you put your heart and soul in. So
is there anything else you want to tell us about the game? Anything I haven't asked you that you want to talk about?
Well, actually there's one thing that I wanted to mention because it's always a nice trivial fact, and that's about the guy who did all the voices. Nobody knows it, but all the voices from all the characters were done by one guy. So He's the real talent behind behind the characters. It's John Bell. He's an American, so he helped us out great with the best feedback, and yeah, that's actually the only thing I just wanted to say. So
yeah, he did an awesome job. All the performances were great. So.
Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit. So. Yeah.
But yeah, if there's anything else you want to talk about, the game or not, the floor is yours. Anything you're interested in discussing? How's the weather?
In Belgium, oh, it sucks. It's very, very bad. Okay, it's clearly no summer anymore here. what I want to talk about, did you play versus mode on the game?
I did not play versus mode yet. I haven't really had anyone around to play it with yet. My roommate has been stupidly busy with different jobs, and he just started a new band, but hopefully I could get him to sit down and we'll try the versus mode soon.
You can play it alone too. You can you can just play against three AI. You know, the computer, actually. Yeah. So, yeah,
I will have to give that a try.
Yeah, because there's sadly enough, there was no time and no money to make an online versus mode. So we had to do AI to fight against. Otherwise, it would kind of be a bit pointless unless you have someone around to play with. You can play against a computer. But it's fast-paced. It's more the camera is more zoomed out than the campaign mode, so the guys are a lot smaller on the screen, which made it look very slow. So we had to crank up the speed and the height you can jump, and you can throw grenades further and faster, and everything goes a lot faster. So actually, we had very much fun making that, and it was hard not to get carried away when we're playing versus at the studio. So you were easily playing an hour. Yeah. So,
well, you mentioned online with that. I might as well ask, was there any thought of adding online co-op to the campaign?
Well, we discussed it a lot, but actually the game was, the game was intended as a single player game, eh? Just play with Vinny, because in the cutscenes you probably noticed there's only one guy, eh? It's always only Vinny and his adversaries, or how do you call it, and we always ask the main programmer, it would be so awesome to make a multiplayer game. Yeah, oh, that's just impossible. I can't add that anymore. It will prolong. It will double the production time. You know, but we say, yeah, but how about co-op then? Local co-op? Oh yeah, it's easy. I didn't do that from the beginning then. So, actually, it was not that easy, but because the camera and all, what do you do with it? And we were so far in production that it was impossible to change it all. You know, we just had limited time and money, and you have to make choices. So, and a lot of things are physics based in the game, and apparently that's a problem for online, because every computer has kind of a different calculation of what will happen when you jump or you throw or you kick something away, and it wouldn't be a problem in the, at first, but it's a kind of a domino effect that would be game breaking. So also there's a problem of hosting servers and all, and the costs also money. So actually, yeah, it's time and money that we need to do that.
Well, there's the sequel. So the sequel is going to have aliens, that Sonic Blaster, and online co-op.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're already doing prototypes with online now. So for another game or a sequel, we're kind of in prototype stage. So.
I was just going to ask, what's next for you guys after this is all said and done with Guns, Gore, and Cannoli? What's next?
Well, actually, I would love to do a sequel of Guns, Gore, and Cannoli, but we try to look at other games, how well sequels do, and probably we would do, the art style would be the same. So you have to do a lot of more things that refresh the game. We are kind of afraid that that a sequel would be less popular, you know. And so we had so much fun making versus mode that we try to focus on the next game where that's the main game, you know. And but then online, of course. And there would be a small campaign mode that's also online co-op, of course. But we were thinking about survival mode and capture the flag mode and please, Mr. Crocodile, may I cross the river, or how do you call it? that kind of game modes. And with the focus on online game, on my online multiplayer, of course. So, and also, yeah, you know, the 1920s, it has been a lot of fun, but it's also very restricting in what you can and can't do, you know, especially in weapons. We try to make everything as authentic as possible, but like the flamethrower, that's not a flamethrower that you would find in that era. It's more Second World War flamethrower stuff. So, but I guess gamers don't really care about facts. It just, it has to be fun, you know.
Yeah, as long as it's fun, that's all that really matters in the end.
Yeah.
And hey, so, if you ever need a second American voice in your game, I'll offer my services free of charge.
That's great. I'm going to write it down. I have it on tape now. Yeah, well, it's a good voice actor. We looked for several guys, but it's, lots of guys are so limited. So because at first we used John Bell to do, who did voices in that short animated film that I made 10 years ago or something, and he did voices of the gangsters, and it sounded really great. So now 10 years later, we asked, "Can you do the voice of Finney again?" And okay, yeah, great. Yeah, send me the dialogues. Okay, and the next day he sent the voices, and the man sounded like an old man. It was like, oh my god, it sounds like he's 70. And then we asked Sean, yeah, there's like something wrong with the voice. Can't you do it like you did it 10 years ago? And we kept our fingers crossed because we thought, how old is this guy actually? Perhaps he just can't do it anymore. And then he sent back one, I forgot to re-listen to how I did the voices before. So, okay, here you go. And he did it right that time, but he almost gave us a heart attack. It was like, this guy won't be able to do the voices anymore. No, what are we going to do?
Kind of curious to hear those takes. Like, hey, where's the money, you little bastard? Yeah. This is a delicious cannoli. Let me put my teeth in and I can have it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that bad. It was more like an 80-year-old guy, but it was like he was so tired. It was like it was the 1920s, and I was going to town and like that, and no, he has to be an angry guy. He's always
he wasn't old. He was just falling asleep.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm so glad we got that guy because. Yeah, he's worth a lot, you know, for doing all those voices, and he's very fast too. So, yeah, he's great.
All right. Well, we are creeping up on an hour here. Is there any? Do you want to give a last final plea to our listeners to buy the game?
I would say, yeah, buy the game, or I'll hunt you down, but. I guess it's not going to work.
Well, you could. You'd have to fly around. Yeah, I'll track him down for you. I'll bust some fucking kneecaps for you.
Yeah, I could hire some mobsters perhaps, yeah, but I guess they're just going to want a piece of the pie. So
I'll just yell at them on the podcast if they don't buy it.
Okay,
I'll just get like a list of all of our, like, Randall... You didn't buy the game, you're dead to me. Zach, you didn't buy the game, you're dead to me. I'll just go down a list of everyone who listens to the show.
Okay, great.
I'll single them all out.
That's great. Okay. If it helps the sales, then you got to do what you got to do, man.
Hey, they know what I look like. I'll beat the shit out of all of them for you.
Okay.
But anyway, it was a blast having you on. I'm so glad I got you guys on the show. I wish you all the success with this game. It absolutely deserves it. And I hope Belgium now gets on the map of video game developers with your game. And you said that, you know, others releasing shortly. So go Belgium, right?
Okay, yeah, go Belgium indeed.
Do you have any final words at all for our listeners, or just like one final, a one-liner, a zinger, anything fun to end the show?
Okay. That's a lot of weight on my shoulders, but
it is. We do this to every guest.
Yeah, I should have listened to that before.
It's okay. No one else listens to the show.
Okay. Well, at first I want to thank you for having me on the show, of course, and then I would want to thank everyone. Just gives the game a shot, and I would say don't hesitate if you come across it, because it will be worth your time and your money. So do it, just buy it,
or we fucking kill them.
Yeah, okay, yeah, or we fucking kill you.
We'll be right back. Maybe one more time.